Hey guys, it's Albert. We're going to do all the normal stuff this week with Jenny and Connor. We're going to get to the news items of the week. We're going to get to your questions in the six pack, but we're going to open up with a little bit of an announcement. Let's go. All right, welcome back. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. It's week one, but we're actually reaching the end of the road with this particular format for the podcast. Connor's here. Jenny's here. We're breaking up.
Oh.
It's kind of sad, but we're breaking up. And there's an explanation for this. We don't hate each other. This is more about trying to give you guys content every day. So I'm going to have a solo podcast, which is going to be sort of centered on answering your questions. Jenny and Connor are going to, I think your podcast is going to be a little bit of this format where you guys are going to go through news topics. And so, yeah, we'll always have the super bar. I just want to make sure we were transparent with everybody that this will be the last time that we do the MMQB podcast in this way. But right on that feed, you'll be able to still get Connor and Jenny. You'll still be able to get me. You'll still get Gary and Andy. You'll still get all the things that you've got. You're just going to get more of it. It's going to be a daily effort from all of us to kind of get you guys NFL content every day of the week, which honestly, for me, like podcasts are the way I consume a lot of the sports that I'm not covering. So I think it's great that we're doing this. And we're going to, again, get that kicked off once we get out of week one starting next week. And so I guess unless you guys have any sort of sappy stories you want to tell about the last year that we spent together, we can go to the news topics.
Trying to think of like a non-acrimonious power breakup as on the scale of this.
Should we make up a story? Like maybe we give this a little drama?
There was like some kind of fist fight
in the cafeteria or something. Like.
But then if Jenny and I breaking off into our own podcast fuels speculation that the fight was between one of us and
well, I would have to be involved then, and then it could be either of you or both.
Yeah.
So we'll leave that up to you guys' imagination. You guys can make up whatever story you want to make up. We're going to get to the news topics of the weekend. There's a lot of news to get to coming out of cut down weekend.
I'm kind of disappointed, though. You think we'd be able to come up with something better than a fist fight in the cafeteria.
All right. Well, why don't we all think about it? We'll
get through the five news topics. Hopefully at the end of the show, we can have a best
Reddit chaos theory for Hal.
This is a motivator for all of you who've clicked on the podcast and are listening Wednesday morning,
till the end.
Wednesday afternoon, to stay till the very end. Okay, news topic number one. The Cowboys and Ezekiel Elliott are on the doorstep of a record-setting six-year deal worth roughly $90 million, thus ending the most contentious holdout of the season or the offseason. Elliott would be back on the field for the season opener against the Giants, and all is right with the world in Dallas. As you can tell, Connor Orr, because we want to do this last podcast.
What are you going to do with me not writing your topics anymore?
I know. It's going to be a problem. I'm going to have to lean on the listeners. So because I don't have a time machine, I can't tell whether or not this is going to be done Tuesday night. My feeling is that it's in a positive place. And I've communicated with some Cowboys people today who say they're sort of putting one block on top of the other. They're quote unquote chopping wood. I think that they will make it to the finish line. So the way I look at this, guys, is I don't think there's much of an argument on who Zeke is as a player. And you guys feel free to disagree on this. I don't think there's an argument on who Zeke is as a player. I think the whole argument here is about whether or not it's worth paying a running back this much or whether or not it's a good idea to latch yourself to a running back at this level. And I personally don't think the Cowboys have much of a choice.
Yeah, I mean, it's an entire offense built around him, seemingly. Yeah. But what was weird to me, really the entire time, is that Jerry Jones seemed to utilize all of the assets that he had to squeeze Ezekiel Elliott, you know, and to make it seem like, okay, the money's running out. You know, we think you're worth in between this and this, and, you know, we're just going to move on without you, Zeke, who, all that stuff. But at no point maybe brought up the fact that, you know, he's kind of been a knucklehead throughout his entire career in Dallas, and that was maybe one of the reasons that they were nervous about forking over a long-term extension. You know, I mean, the whole idea of paying a running back is scary enough, not to mention a guy that's been suspended in the past and has had repeat issues this summer. But all along, you know, it was always about this pool of money, this pie, or whatever he was describing.
Well, Jerry did reference it.
Yeah.
Jerry did reference it when he said, I think I've earned the right to joke with Zeke. Remember that?
Yeah.
That's I like the way I took that was referencing that. Like, I had your back. You know, like, you know, Jenny, like,
right.
when he said, like, I've earned the right to joke with Zeke,
okay.
with Zeke
yeah.
when he said, like, and it was coming off of him making the comment, the Zeke who comment, right? Like, I took that at least as a reference to, listen, I had your back after all, through all of this stuff. So don't get a little upset. Don't get upset when I make a little joke about our whole situation.
Yeah. The question will come down to what are the Cowboys' outs, right? What are the what's baked into the contract that protects them? If they give him the average per year that he wants, which the early reports indicate that they've met that threshold of, what, 15 a year?
Yep.
So the question then becomes, yeah, how did the Cowboys protect themselves? How are the guarantees structured? And are there any allowances for, you know, things voiding for off-field behavior, for instance?
Right. And I think that's going to be an important piece of it. And if I look at what this is, where this is right now, if it does wind up being 90-6, I think the Cowboys are giving on the total number, right? And I think this is sort of part of the Cowboys' strategy the whole time was – they were like close to what Gurley was making, but not right there. And I think that this is sort of always going to be the last piece. Like, okay, we'll get you past Todd Gurley. $15 million per would be just over the $14,375 that Gurley got from the Rams last summer. The flip side is the years. And they're giving this is Zeke Elliott, Connor, signing his career away. Because this is, this includes the 2 years that are left on his rookie deal. This is an 8-year deal. Like, Zeke Elliott, like he is signing his career away to the Cowboys in exchange for becoming the highest paid running back in football.
I hate to sound like everybody else that doesn't really follow football as closely as we do and say that I would love and agree at this moment to sign my life away for $90 million. But it's that, you know, you see the running back position, you see the reason why it's such a scary proposition to sign these guys long term in the first place. So, you know, I think on one hand, it's like, okay, you can say that you top the market, it's good for the position, and that's your security. I mean, that's your little chunk of security for the rest of your career. I mean, I don't know. It's like you said, demanding the years in return kind of puts him between a rock and a hard place, but what are you going to do? I mean, it seems like the most logical thing.
I also think if I'm Zeke, wouldn't you be looking at Todd Gurley too and saying to yourself, all right, like, we can push all the buttons, we can do everything we need to do, but when it comes time to do a deal, like, I think we should probably just do the best deal we can get, right? And not wait any longer on this. Because if you look at what happened with Gurley, if the Rams had to do that deal today that they did 1 year ago, are they doing that deal again?
No.
Right.
Right. And that's why the calculation is different for running backs than other positions, right? You see quarterbacks taking shorter deals to, you know, be able to cash in again in 3 years or whatever the case may be. It's different calculation for a running back.
And he has to think too, like, right, like, all right, like, in a year, my circumstances might change completely. So I gotta take the money that I can. I gotta get the most money I can right now.
Sorry, I was distracted by the 814 junk call coming in on your phone.
I have no idea.
My 814 is my home area code, Albert. So
it's the same area code as Erie.
Yeah,
it's
basically like half of the large swath of the state of Pennsylvania is 814
okay.
because no one lives in this rural, strip down from Erie through State College.
Erie's got to be like 3 or 4 hours from State College.
It's a little bit of a drive,
It's far.
Albert getting a deep newsy call from someone in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
Pennsylvania.
So sorry to your source in Erie to call them out like that.
Okay, who wants to take news topic number two?
Uh-oh.
We're fumbling with our phones here. All right,
where
I got it.
Phone?
I got it. Right. I think you left it on the chair. Oh, you have it. Okay. Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur have ended their strange summer of positing over the quarterback's right to call audibles at the line, finally admitting this week that, yes, Aaron has the freedom. Is this the last lover's quarrel we'll see between the two, or is it simply just the beginning? This is such a huge question for the season, because when we were making playoff predictions, I honestly didn't know what to do with the Packers.
Yeah.
Because you would think they were at one point a perennial playoff team. Rodgers has been hurt. Obviously, last year they had the dramatics and Mike McCarthy's firing. And now, is this the year that he gets back on track? Or should we believe what we're seeing with some of this off-season dance between Rodgers and his new head coach that, you know, maybe we should trust that it's not quite kumbaya?
Yeah, and I think it's... So what's been so fascinating about this from the beginning, from the very beginning, right? Like, so... Like what you're talking about, that like sort of friction, I think that like a big piece of that is if you look at the two parties here, LaFleur on one side and Rodgers on the other, like LaFleur's offense is built to make everything easy on the quarterback, right? And that's why it's worked for young guys like Jared Goff and Jimmy Garoppolo, because it's everything's like the protection calls go to the center, right? Like, so that's off the quarterback. A lot of times they go with double calls, putting two calls on, sending two calls in and saying, read this, and then you go in that direction. Everything's based on playing fast and getting the quarterback where he's not out there thinking. And on the other hand, you've got Rodgers, who's always had ultimate control over everything and has been able to do whatever he wants. And now he's being told to play in structure. So I think that piece of it is like right what you, that's the heart of what you're getting to. And so I asked somebody a couple days ago about this, who's there, and I said, so does he have the green light? And the answer I got back was, well, it's kind of a moving target for us because we believe the offense provides him with answers to every question that he's going to be presented with out there. So for us to say he's got the green light to do whatever he wants, well, we would like for him to play within the answers that we're giving him, which I think is sort of an interesting thing because what we saw with Mike McCarthy was like, it was almost like kind of going off the reservation a little bit. If that happens, then what happens? It's just, there's like a bunch of moving parts there.
I watched this show called Married at First Sight. And
oh man, what a pull.
And the entire premise of the show is that a panel of experts goes into a city and then matches people based on their idea of like this high-minded idea of togetherness and compatibility. But really, it's reality TV, right?
Yep.
So what they're doing is they're putting a match in a bottle of gasoline and they're making them live together in a house. So yep. it blows up. The awkwardness that I saw between these two couple or these three couples that you follow throughout this season, especially, like it reminds me of like Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur, and that it's just this odd passive aggression from the beginning, like from the first day that you move in together, like your first date is your wedding in this show, right? And so even from then, it's like these odd comments about, you know, why would you wear that? Or, you know, why would you play this song at our wedding? And, you know, and they don't know each other. And I feel like it's just giving me a similar vibe, you know, I don't know.
So to take that to another level then, this might work if sparks fly right
sure.
away.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like if they go out against the Bears on Thursday night and put up like 42 points in that defense, now all of a sudden maybe the sparks fly and this chemistry comes out of that and now they live happily ever after. Or the problem is so the flip side of that is if it doesn't work, well, then they've both got all kinds of reasons to question it already.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like one of those where it has to work right away or maybe it doesn't work, right?
I would warn them that I think it's on like season 6 or 7. Only like 2 of the couples are still married.
There are 7 seasons?
Yeah. No, we're pretty
into it. So you're invested, huh?
Yeah. It's a good show.
Do you know about this show?
I have watched it.
Is it good?
Because my sister has the same taste in television as Connor and was at my apartment one time and was like, hey, want to watch this show? So it was a previous season and I feel like both of the couples featured in the episode that I watched were on their way to breaking up.
We're looking for a new show, so is this worth like starting or no?
Well, you got to get in on the ground floor because in 2 weeks is the ultimatum day where you decide whether you want to get married, stay married, or get a divorce. And so you'd be coming in at a really bad. You'd be coming in at the penultimate episode of Game of Thrones, essentially. Like you need to go
7 seasons, and this is the conclusion.
This is the conclusion of season 7. So I think you need to catch a wave from the beginning because you need to get to know the couples, the families, and you know what my wife and I do is at the beginning of every season we place a bet on which couple will get divorced, and if our couple gets divorced, then you get to go out to dinner.
It started with 3, and there are 2 left?
No, no, no. They follow like three or four couples every year, and then you follow them throughout the course.
Oh, so they're different. So it's not the same couples then. They're different.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Every season they go to like a different city. They go to like Charlotte or Atlanta. This season in Charlotte, four couples. And then you go through the season, and then at the last episode, you come in, and you're not allowed to talk about it with your partner, but you have to look them in the eye and say whether or not you want to get married or stay married or get divorced.
Wait, so who goes first?
It's different. They kind of just put everybody on the spot, you know?
Because, I mean, like, wouldn't it be awkward if, like, that, like, the first person to go...
That has happened. Well, I know what you're about to say. That has happened.
It has happened.
Where someone said, I would like to stay married, and the second person's like, nah.
I'm out.
What was that like after?
I mean, it's all reality TV, right? Yeah. So who knows what has actually happened in there, what has actually transpired, and what's just sort of a clever camera angle. But, you know, anyway... I think at the end of this season, it's on demand, right? Lifetime. Yeah. Okay. You can on demand it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I might check that out.
Big Lifetime guy.
So the takeaway is that the odds of it working out are small.
Yes.
But not impossible. Yeah. But not impossible.
Yeah. Sorry for getting us off the rails there.
Have a bunch of them like worked out?
Well, he said only what?
I think only two or three of the couples are still together.
Out of the seven seasons.
Out of like two out of 30.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
One more thing on this show. It's just
a plug for it.
It really is. The chief, she's a marriage therapist, right? And her name is Dr. Pepper.
Oh,
she's like the head of it.
Wow.
A lot of reasons to watch it. Anyway, so good luck to the Packers.
Okay. So I guess we have to give this next one to you, Connor. News item number three, another arranged marriage.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Good segue. Thanks for saving me on that one. Over the weekend, the Texans stunned the football world by dealing Jadeveon Clowney to the Seahawks and spending two first-round picks to get Laremy Tunsil from the Dolphins. Is this a team flying blindly into darkness, or does Billy O'Brien have something cooking in Houston?
Wow.
So I would tell you that I understand their process in going and getting Laremy Tunsil, and I think you can believe that for the 2019 Texans, getting Laremy Tunsil is huge. That offensive line was a tire fire last year. Deshaun Watson playing that way is unsustainable. And we've seen it with Andrew Luck, right? Like, that is unsustainable. And the Texans got that example right in their division. What happens when your quarterback gets the crap kicked out of him, right? The guy retired after 8 years. They don't want to be in that position.
And they've had it themselves with David Carr.
Right. I mean, Deshaun Watson, like, I don't know if we could overplay the story last year. Deshaun Watson had to take a bus 12 hours to a game last year because he was that beat up, right? Like how ridiculous is that? So I think like fixing the left tackle problem once and for all, like that's great. I also think the asset management here is an issue because you look at the Clowney thing and it's like, okay, like you gave up a three. You gave up a three to get Duke Johnson, right? So you give up the three to get Duke Johnson. Now you got a three coming back for Clowney and you got two bit players, Mingo and Martin. So it's Mingo, Martin, and Duke Johnson for Jadeveon Clowney. That, to me, like, if you're all in on this year, just take the 16 games of Jadeveon Clowney, you know?
Right.
That's the way I look at that. Tunsil, then you look at the spending there, and, like, that's like, God, like is there something else you could have done creatively to not clean out 2 years of first-round picks? I mean, like, if you look at this, what's crazy is they're going to go through – they didn't have a first or a second rounder last year in 2018. No first or second rounder in 2020, and no first or second rounder in 2021. That is, I mean, like, wow. I mean, that's like so, right on the doorstep of having to extend your quarterback when the financial landscape is going to change, and you're going to need those draft picks because that's where your cheap talent comes from. Like, you sort of put yourself out. So I like the idea of going and getting and fixing the left tackle problem once and for all because of what was happening to Deshaun Watson. And I understand how hard it is to find a left tackle. At the same time, like, the asset management here, I think, is what you can absolutely question.
Yeah, because, you know, the year they got Watson, and obviously it was worth it to go up, but they cleared out draft capital the year after that. So they're just kind of undercutting their roster over a series of years here without high draft picks, which is how you build your roster. The return is just, how much Miami got is just stunning to me. And they put Stills in the deal, and Stills is a very good player and make contributions, but there was no reason to believe that Miami was going to keep him, right? There was every reason to believe that Miami was going to let him go. So to make him part of the trade package, a player that you figured they were probably going to move from anyway, on from anyway, just the calculation here. And, you know, is it all because they didn't get Dillard in the draft and they felt backed into a corner? But that's a years-long situation of feeling backed into a corner. It's not one single draft move, right? I mean, basically, they found themselves in a totally unsustainable position days from the season, and they panicked to fix it. And that's years in the making.
And I also think, like, it's interesting, too, because it's like they drafted Tytus Howard to be their left tackle. And now Tytus Howard is probably going to be their long-term right tackle. The guy they drafted in the second round, Max Scharping, was going to be their long-term right tackle. Now he's going to be a guard. The way this works out for the Texans is if that line becomes the Cowboys line. That's the only way I see that. That's what it almost has to be now, based on the amount of resources they've dumped into it. Because if you think about it, right, they spent a first and a second round pick this year on it, a first and a second round pick next year on it, and a first round pick in 2021 on it in one offseason. That's an enormous amount of capital. And I remember the Cowboys got criticized when they did what they did, taking a center where they took him, taking Zach Martin where they took him. That worked out because it became the identity. They nailed those picks, right? Travis Frederick, Zach Martin, Tyron Smith, best offensive line in football, became their identity. You almost feel like that's what Houston has to become now. Like, for this to work and for this to look good down the road, that Houston offensive line has to become like the Cowboys offensive line.
It reminds me a little bit of what the Jets sort of ownership allowed to happen, where you had all this salary cap space and a general manager that you were going to fire anyway, and then you let him spend all of your money, and then you got rid of him. And the Texans were apparently conducting this internal audit of themselves, and, you know, that led them to fire their general manager, but not before you let him draft two offensive linemen in the first three rounds that were supposed to help, you know, alleviate this problem. And so to me, it just seems like it's hard to agree with Bill O'Brien that there is a plan. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, right, this is all a year-to-year thing. I mean, if they go on a run this year, I think a lot of people forget about it and, you know, and move on. I mean, all these coaches really need is that one run to the AFC Championship game or whatever it is to legitimize what they're doing, and then they get a new contract extension, and then they have four more years to figure it out, you know,
right,
and to get all the picks back.
So my two lingering things here. The first one I want to ask you guys, does this make the job less attractive if you're Nick Caserio in 2020? Because Nick's letting his contract run out. Like, he's very close with Bill O'Brien. Does this make the job less attractive to Nick Caserio?
I think so.
Connor?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not taking it, but I'm not a Texas guy. It's a thick heat.
Oh, so it's like it's a geography thing.
It's a thick heat, yeah.
It's hard to get a deodorant that works in this.
Texas is tough. Texas is tough. And then I think that the second piece of this to me is, do you think that they can... To me, like, I think that they've sort of created this narrow window, right? J.J. Watt's 30. Whitney Mercilus is 29. DeAndre Hopkins is 27, but he's got 7 years on his legs now, right? Like, he's going into his eighth year. You know, who knows how much longer he's going to be, like, a super elite receiver. So, like, I sort of feel like you've created this small window where you've got Watson on a rookie deal. You've got Tunsil coming in now. And you've sort of got to win before those guys age out. And once those guys age out, now you're going to need all the draft capital to replace them. And so do you think they're good enough to win in this window? Do you think Watson's good enough to win in this window? Do you think the roster they put together can compete with the Kansas Cities and the New Englands? Because it does feel like they've sort of created this short window for themselves.
Why not keep Clowney?
Yeah.
Right. And that's exactly what I'm saying. That's why I said the 16
right?
games of Clowney.
It makes no sense.
Yeah, the 16 games of Clowney. Like, and that's why I think like the 16 games of Clowney was actually valuable, right? Because you are creating
totally
a short
valuable
window.
Yeah.
Orr's projections do not have the Texans winning the division this year.
No.
No.
I mean, Orr picked the Seahawks to win the Super Bowl before the Clowney trade.
And then they went all
so
out on Clowney.
So I think
yeah.
that we've really got to pay some mind to the Oracle here. Yeah. It's time to stop ignoring him. Okay? I feel like the Oracle has been under-consulted in our world, and I want to put an end to that now.
Who does the Oracle have taking the AFC South?
Jaguars.
Same. Wow.
Wow.
Yes.
So you believe in Foles? Is that a vote for Nick Foles?
Come on.
I think it's not high on Tennessee. Indy obviously has a major change, and the Texans.
I'm not out on Indy yet.
You're not out on Indy.
I mean, I think if Jacoby Brissett can be the 20th best quarterback in football, Indy's going to compete.
You and Andy Benoit are similar in that way, but it feels. I didn't know you picked the Jaguars.
I did.
I feel so much better now. Ugh.
I also picked the Seahawks to go pretty far in the playoffs, but not the Super Bowl.
I was late delivering my power poll yesterday. I was doing some work and I initially had a text filled out to our editor that just said just give me the Vrentis, just copy hers and paste it into mine, and I'm good. And I didn't know what it was, but I felt I knew it was going to.
I had like an epiphany doing the power poll yesterday. The power poll will kill. There's no better way to kill like the cookie cutter August optimism than doing a power poll.
That's a great point.
You go through it, like, and then you start to realize, like, this team that you thought really good, you felt like this team could be pretty good. Like, they've got this going at quarterback, and they've got that going on defense, and I like this coach. And you start to talk yourself into this team's going to be really good. And like, I found like doing the power poll yesterday, it's like, I can't put them over them. And then before you know it, that team like that you had all this August optimism for is like 23 on the list.
I've had similar feelings. It's like my fantasy draft last week I forgot about, and I logged in round 7, so I've been auto-drafted. And I ended the day, and I was like, oh, this team's pretty good. And then I did another fantasy draft the other night, and I was like, players that had been taken for me in like round 4 were like going in like round 9. And I was like, oh my gosh, that team is horrible.
All right. We're off the rails again. Let's get back on the rails. News item number 4. The Dolphins seem to be in full-on tank mode, saddling Ryan Fitzpatrick with a line that does not have an anchor and a receiving core with no true number 1. Will this bottoming out result in a Browns-esque rebirth? I do think that the analogy is correct there. This feels a lot like what the Browns did with Sashi Brown in 2016 and 2017.
Which, if you're Brian Flores, please be careful.
Yeah.
Make sure you get this team on the other side, too. Yeah. Don't just be the guy that runs them into the ground.
But I think that's a real I think this is a real challenge for Flores, because he's doing a lot of the things that Matt Patricia did in Detroit. And it makes sense because they're both from the same place, right? Like, so that, like, they're asking a lot of the players down there. And I think it becomes that because the players are human, right? They're watching all of this stuff happening, right? So when the coach is asking a lot of you and the organization's trading away players, building assets for the future, I mean, if you're a player, it's really hard to not take that as they don't care about this year. And B, it's also fair for every player on that roster to ask, how much longer am I even going to be here? So I think that that's a real challenge for Brian Flores. And I think that this is, I think he can do it. I just think it's a really tough thing, because if you're a demanding coach like he is, like all the guys from the Belichick tree are, and you're not providing immediate results, It's hard to ask that much of guys.
Once you start the process of the roster rebuild, there is no turning back, right?
Yeah.
Because the guys on the team eventually get so demoralized with the direction of the team that it becomes almost impossible to keep them there. We sort of saw this with the Raiders, you know, once the Mac trade happened and then the Cooper trade, and then Bruce Irvin meets with Gruden midseason and they mutually decide that he's going to leave, you know, because it's hard to stay there when you just realize that this season is nothing, right? And the Raiders had a huge roster turnover after Gruden came in, but then they had another one. They turned over from last year again, right? And so I think that's where the challenge becomes, is do you keep any staples of your locker room, and how do they sort of make it through? And it has to be a guy with like a temperament like Joe Thomas almost,
right,
who's just like seen a ton in his career and is like, I'm really good at my job. I'm going to continue to be really good at my job. And
well, isn't it hard, Jenny? Like, if you're asking the question, like, wouldn't it be hard not to ask the question if your player, why should this matter to me if it doesn't matter to you?
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, why should this season matter to me if it doesn't matter to you?
Yes. It's it's hard not to look at what they're doing and think this is like great asset wise. Like they're getting tremendous returns. They are setting up to reshape this team in whatever image they want. But the practicality of it, or how it actually plays in the locker room and putting a team together, is often doesn't look quite as good as it does on paper, right?
Yeah.
It is like, you know, you forget sometimes the callousness of it a little bit. You know what I mean? That there's 53 guys that you're asking to just get totally beat up for a year so that you can be good next year when none of them are around. It's just like, it really does kind of stink, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's hard. Like, I do think it's hard on the head coach. Like, I think it's like a really, like, it's hard for the head coach to get up there and say, tune out everything that you're watching. Tune out the fact that, like, the best player on the team is now in Houston. Like, I need you to tune out all of that. Like, that's hard. Like,
here's
that's
the issue, though. Do you continue on this? This is what I don't understand, right? There are coaches that take over teams that are, like, middling roster-wise and transform them into something great without doing a roster overhaul. You could say that Sean McVay did that, right? That team was average at best roster-wise. They signed a few high-profile free agents, and they went to the Super Bowl. You know, but if you're a team like the Dolphins who has been middling for so long, it's easy for us to sit here and champion this tanking. But like, what is the answer? You know, like if you were a general manager and you were taking over the Dolphins, do you go the path of trying to find your Sean McVay and legitimize this in year one? Or do you have, you know, do you put your team through this?
I think there is an example of someone doing like the middle of that, though. Like, to me, that's what Buffalo did, right? Buffalo, Sean McDermott's first year, kept everybody on board and competed that first year, made the playoffs, then ripped the Band-Aid off. And the reason they did it was because they felt like we have to sort of establish something here first. And so I think that that's a fair question to ask. Like, is that a better way to do it? It's like, you know, you've got problems, but kind of like, let's ride them out for a year. Let's make sure we get everybody on board. And then when everybody understands what the expectations are, then we rip the Band-Aid off and rebuild.
It's just so tricky because you are gambling that you will be able to turn all of these players into, you will be able to put the draft picks to use with players that are of equivalent caliber. And I know the more draft picks you have, the more chances you have, but you have a left tackle. That is a win with a draft pick. Mm-hmm. And so you're basically trusting that you'll be able to get another win when the hit rate is something like 50%.
Yep. I don't want to sound like we're killing the Texans for trading so much for Tunsil and then killing the Dolphins.
Right.
Like we're killing both. But there's definitely risk on both sides.
Not killing, just saying there's risk.
There's definitely risk
there's
on
risk.
Both sides.
Yeah.
I think one point that it is funny to make, though, that, you know, this whole time, really the last 2 years, you know, I was just like, why aren't the Texans being aggressive? This is a crazy window that they have right now. Now I'm just like, why are you being so aggressive?
Why?
Like, what is going on? You know, that's too much.
Too much. Dial it back.
Dial it down.
So how about this, Connor, though? Since you're an aficionado of everything Ryan Fitzpatrick, can he still pull off that, like, magic month?
Yeah.
That month where he just, it all comes together for him.
Yeah.
You're betting on him still.
Here's
no
the
Tunsil,
thing.
No Stills. You're still all in on Fitzmagic just happening randomly for like 3 or 4 weeks.
It's as dependable as a lunar cycle, I would say. Like, you could set your watch to it.
See, that's a problem too, though. Right?
You win 4 games and then all of a sudden.
That's a problem
Fitzpatrick
too.
Fitzpatrick just gets, you know, disappears.
Well, no, but it's a problem in that, like, maybe we have the 5th pick in the draft now instead of the first or the second pick.
Oh, right, right. Okay, so you really
Fitz
just...
magic could be a problem.
Here's what I will say on that thread poor Josh Rosen. Like, you went from just a dumpster fire roster-wise in Arizona to a chance to be like, okay, well, maybe this is going to be a fresh start, and then you don't win the quarterback battle. And then at some point, he is going to play this season.
Mm-hmm.
And when he takes over, the roster is going to be more dejected, more turned over, more beat up than they were the first game of the season.
Probably flat-out checked out on the season.
Yeah, that's going to be bad.
Yeah, it's hard not to feel really bad for him the way that his career has gone, and you just sort of hope that someone else trades for him again and he ends up in a better situation where maybe he can develop behind a really good starter on a good team, right?
I think it's a good example too of like how, like, as important as that position is, and like like how important it is to like get that right. Guys at that position are also so dependent on everything around them, and so much is dictated by their circumstances, you know? Like Tom Brady goes in the sixth round. Well, he just happens to land with the greatest coach of all time, you know, and that works out. So much of, you know, these guys' careers are dictated by their situations, and you know, Rosen's a really good example of it. Okay, who wants to take the fifth one?
I'll take it, but just a note to our producer, Shelby, just get the beep. Can we get the beep ready? We can beep.
Okay.
All
right.
So I'll take this one. Khalil Mack told the Chicago Tribune this week that he's so f-ing ready for football to start. How f-ing ready are you guys for some football?
I'm ready for football. I'm ready to stop drumming up topics that may or may not look smart in, you know, in October, November. I'll tell you what. Like I think the thing I'm most excited to see in 2019, and you guys can give me what yours are, I want to see Patrick Mahomes. Like in 2019, because everyone there, I think we look at the 50 touchdown season last year and all the crazy things he pulled off. And there's this like, I think we all have the tendency to think, okay, that can't repeat itself. There's going to be a correction to that. And you talk to people in that organization, you talk to guys who've coached against him, it's like, no. Like this is... there's another step he's going to take. And so I'm really excited to see what that might be. And he gets to play against your AFC South champions in week one.
True.
In Jacksonville.
That'll be a tough loss for them.
I'm interested to see what happens with Jimmy G.
Yeah.
You know, there's been a lot of discussion swirling after a bumpy preseason. But, you know, he's coming off an ACL. He should get better as the year goes on.
I have two.
Okay.
Raiders, obviously. I mean... But like what's going to happen there?
Right.
And I would say the second is going to be watching the Seahawks win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know what I'm most interested about with the Raiders? Week one, is the uniform inspector, you know, like...
On high alert.
Yeah. What is week one like for the uniform inspector?
Make sure you check out the tint of the silver on Antonio Brown's helmet.
If
it looks spray painted at all. Like.
Yeah. Or like, what if it's swapped out after warm-ups or something? Like, there are a lot of possibilities here.
It's like that would be fantastic. That's a Monday night game too, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So that'll be on national TV.
Mm.
It's like my friend in rec basketball. We used to have the jewelry check before the games because you weren't allowed to have like an earring, but that was part of his aesthetic, you know, was that one earring.
You weren't allowed to have earrings?
No, because it was essentially like a...
Was that a state rule or was that a
small knife swinging around in your ear if the back came off?
Okay. You know? Was that like a school rule or was that a state rule?
I think that was state because my dad's a state basketball referee and he has to do jewelry checks before games.
Okay.
But he would sneak it back on.
Oh wow!
Because when you're that age, really it's all about what you look like.
Well, you look good, you play good. When you play good, they
take a lot of shots. I didn't get the ball a whole lot then, you know. But
that reminds I don't know why what popped in my head was like LeBron. If you watch any picture, if you watch anything of him from high school, he's got like the tape on his arm.
Yeah,
because he went to a Catholic high school and tattoos. You weren't supposed to show tattoos. And so, like, every picture of LeBron in high school has, like, a tattoo, like, completely covered up.
I didn't know that. That's sad. Wow. Did we come up with a better conspiracy theory? I'm really looking to Orr here because I feel like he's our resident conspiracy. Nothing against you, Albert, but don't...
With Raiders?
Why the pod broke up.
Oh, why the pod broke up.
We've had 45-some minutes now, and we've come up with nothing better. So our creative juices are disappointing in this
effort. I think it was you guys conspiring to overthrow me. Power grab.
What if, you know,
Shelby's behind our new producer over here, Shelby.
Just shows up the day that everything changes.
Weird. Really weird,
really
Shelby.
Weird.
I'm watching Shelby.
I would say that at some point during the season I discovered that Albert was secretly high on the Raiders and that created
that
the rift that ended up shaking us to our core.
Right.
Just passive aggressive pre-production meetings, you know, eventually we would do them all on speaker phones in separate offices, mm-hmm. and then just come together for as long as we could stand each other, and then, you know, and that was it. And it just got ugly. You know?
Gruden wants off Hard Knocks or wants off the podcast.
My theory is that I finished off the dark chocolate M&Ms in the cafeteria, and Albert arrived and the canister was empty.
That would be
sacrilege.
That would be reason for any of us to leave the podcast. That would be. Thank God there's just so many of them, and they're never going
never,
anywhere.
Yeah. Endless supply.
I wish I had actually thought of something. I don't have anything good. So, hey, it's been fun. It's been fun, though. Like the And again, like the idea here is so we can give you guys more football content. Like every morning you're going to be able to get in your car, go into the MMQB feed. There's going to be a new podcast waiting there for you for your commute. So be sure to subscribe to that. And I'm going to remind you again at the end of the podcast, Jenny and Connor's podcast, I think, I can't remember whose goes up when. I think mine goes up on Tuesdays. You guys will go up on Wednesday morning. So they'll both be in the same place. You can still get all of us, just not all of us together because of the Raiders and everything that happened.
And those M&Ms.
Yeah, M&Ms.
I'll never forget, though, the memories that we shared and the things that we learned and the laughs that we had.
This started with Fitzmagic and ended with the Super Bar.
That's right.
Super bar. We got high bars and low bars.
Take us out, Jenny.
All right, guys. All right, we'll get into the six-pack in a second. Last six-pack for this iteration of the podcast. But first, I want to tell you guys about DraftKings. It's time to celebrate. Football is finally back, and DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football, has huge week one contests. The first one starts this Thursday night when Chicago and Green Bay kick off the season in a single-game showdown with $2.5 million. That's right, $2.5 million in total prizes up for grabs. Draft your single-game showdown lineup and feel the sweat like never before. It's simple. Just draft six players from the season opener, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Plus, new users who sign up today on DraftKings using the code MMQB, that's our website, MMQB, will receive a free shot at the $1 million top prize. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching the game quite like having a shot at $1 million payday. Get in on the season opener action. Download the DraftKings app now. Use the code MMQB for a limited time. Both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus of up to $500. And new users, don't miss this extra special week one bonus. Enter my code MMQB to get that free shot at $1 million with your first deposit. That's code MMQB only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires a 25-time playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. I also want to give you guys some details on the podcast that me and Shelby are going to be working on going forward. We're still working through some of the formatting and everything else, but we'll get there. One thing we know is going to be part of it, though, is the mailbag, and that's going to be sort of the idea. I want to interact with you guys. You guys have seen it on Periscope. You're going to see it again in a minute here in the six-pack. I want your questions. I want to give you guys what you want to know about the NFL on a weekly basis. And so we're going to give you two ways to get to us when we start this mailbag podcast next week. One is BreerMailbag@gmail.com. You can email your questions in at BreerMailbag@gmail.com. That's my last name, mailbag@gmail.com. Or you can send us a voicemail. We've got a voicemail. We got a voicemail number here, 201-596-4346. If you call into the voicemail, then we're going to go ahead and get your voice on the show. It'd be pretty cool. I think it's a cool way to interact with you guys. That's the idea, being able to answer your questions, whatever you got NFL-wise. I want to be able to answer it so you can do it those two ways for next week's mailbag and the mailbag shows going forward, BreerMailbag@gmail.com. Or, again, you can leave a message at 201-596-4346. We'll jump right into the six-pack. You guys know how this has worked over the course of the last few years. This will be the last one. It's kind of sad. But I'm going to make this one right for you guys. And you guys have sent in questions over the last few years. I always appreciate the interaction. We did it one last time here on a Tuesday. Put the call out for questions. You ask. I answer. You know, I pick six. You know, if I pick yours, then you get that little heart on Twitter. I like your tweet, and you get an answer here on the podcast. Question number one, this is from Brian Maloney. That's at BF Maloney. Who's calling the plays for the Patriots defense? That's an interesting question. I think the intention is to have Gerard Mayo doing it eventually. But this has always been something that Bill Belichick has made his assistant coaches earn. And if you want to look through the history of it, you can go back to when Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel left New England. Eric Mangini did get the DC title right away. Josh McDaniels didn't. He was the quarterback's coach, even though he was actually the coordinator in 2006, then got the coordinator title, or in 2005, then got the coordinator title in 2006. Bill O'Brien went through the same process. Matt Patricia went through the same process. Brian Flores was in the midst of going through the same process last year, got hired away before they could give him the coordinator title. And so I think that's where Gerard Mayo is right now. It's going to be a matter of him earning the right to call the plays. The good news is the Patriots do have the backstop there of having Bill Belichick, maybe the greatest defensive coach in NFL history, on hand to take over play calling if need be. I think the real concern with the Patriots coaching staff would be all the attrition at the position coach level, which could affect player development, but I don't think you'll see that this year. I think this is more, you know, about like how they're going to manage the play calling as far as the short term goes, and they're going to groom Gerard Mayo to be the guy who calls the defense. How quickly he gets there remains to be seen. Question number two from Sean Morgan, that's at Game Roller B. What have you heard about where Kyle and Jimmy G's relationship stands right now? I think that relationship's in a good place. Wrote about it last month. Mike Shanahan, Kyle's dad, came in and worked with Jimmy while he was hurt towards the end of last year. And I think some of the struggles that you're seeing and or have seen during the preseason are a result of Kyle Shanahan finding different ways to challenge Jimmy Garoppolo. When I asked Kyle about Jimmy a few weeks ago, he said he just needs to play more. He needs more experience. He's got 5 years in the league now, but he's only got 10 NFL starts. And so they want to try to get him as much experience as they can as quickly as they can. And I think that that's led to them challenging him in different ways because they know he can handle it. And so I think you've seen that in practice. You've seen it in the preseason games. I don't think they're going to be putting themselves in a position to lose games in the name of Jimmy Garoppolo's development. But if you're doing it in a preseason game or you're doing it in a practice, then it makes sense to do that. Challenge him in different ways so he grows through his mistakes. I think that that's a big part of what's happened over the course of the summer in San Francisco. Question number three. Yes, I'd make the trade. That's at Adam Fantasy FB. Odds Clowney signs an extension with Seattle. I think Jadeveon Clowney is going to love Seattle. This is a defense that's going to allow him to get upfield. It's going to leverage his athleticism. And that sort of environment is generally good for players. You know, we've seen guys who come in there on short-term deals and wind up there long-term. That's how Michael Bennett arrived there. He was there on a one-year deal initially. That's how Cliff Averill got there. He was there on a two-year deal initially. The Seahawks have been down this road before. They, in the past, have banked on their culture, their building, being so attractive to the player that the player decides to stay in the end. They're banking on that happening with Jadeveon Clowney. I think there's a good chance, based on history, that it does happen, because it's happened in the past. Question number four from Gregory Goggins. That's at double G18. How good can the Colts be with Jacoby Brissett? I think better than expected. I love where the Colts are from a roster building standpoint. I said it with Jenny and Connor. I'd reiterate it now. I think if Jacoby Brissett can be a top 20 quarterback, not even top 10 or top 15, top 20 quarterback, I think the Colts will be right in the mix to win in the AFC South. I love what they've done from a roster building standpoint over the last 3 years. Malik Hooker, I think, gets back to the level he should have been at, coming out of his rookie year when he got hurt. I think you'll see a different Malik Hooker. You've got Darius Leonard and Quentin Nelson as building blocks, first-team All-Pros as rookies. They've put guys like Rocky Sin and Bobby Okereke on the roster this year as rookies. There's depth. There's rhyme and reason to the way they're building it. And I don't think it's built the way the old Colts teams around Peyton Manning were built, where it was built for Peyton Manning. I think this was built agnostic to the quarterback. So the better the quarterback plays, the better the team's going to be. But I don't think this team was built where it was so dependent from a construction standpoint on how good the quarterback's going to be. So I think if Jacoby Brissett can be a quality game manager, a quality bus driver type of quarterback in 2019, the Colts are going to be plenty competitive. Question number five, this is from Joe. That's at I_am_that_guy. What's your take on the Trent Williams situation and how the Skins seem to be handling it? Also, thoughts on the Skins cutting their 2016 first round pick Josh Doctson and his subsequent move to rejoin Kirk Cousins in Minnesota. Let's start with the first question. Look, man, it's hard. It's hard to find a quality left tackle. That was reflected in how much Houston gave up to go and get Laremy Tunsil. Trent Williams, when he's healthy, is one of the two or three best players at his position in the league. I think that this is something that's so outside of football that had to do with the medical staff that it's hard to question Jay Gruden for his handling of it. I do think the upper management, guys like Bruce Allen, probably could have done more to get ahead of this and probably could have done more to address it directly. And it feels like to some degree they've been ignoring it and just thinking that he was going to come in and maybe underestimated the resolve that Trent Williams had here. And so that part of it, to me, you could have done a better job of managing the personal situation here because this wasn't about a contract. This wasn't business. This was very, very much about the personal handling of Trent Williams' medical situation. And so having that personal touch, I think, matters. The second part of your question, Josh Doctson is gone because he was overdrafted. He's not as good as the Redskins thought he was going to be, obviously. And you saw certain areas of the game where he really struggled. He struggled to separate and transition. He struggled to win versus press coverage. And he didn't have great energy. And so you add those things together, and you see a player that just, I think it was hard to have him in the room anymore. Now, sometimes guys go through change and get a wake-up call, and maybe that's what this will be for Josh Doctson. But certainly there were plenty of issues with the Redskins, and that history is that history. Like, you've got that history with the team, and he had 3 years of that history with that organization, or 4 years of that, three years of history with that history of that organization. Very, very difficult to overcome that unless you're playing really, really well. Finally, question number six. This is from Turd Ferguson at Matt_picks. Any Melvin Gordon update? The Chargers aren't moving. They gave him what I think was a fair offer, about $10 million per. The way I look at their offer, if you want to conceptualize it a little bit, it is basically what Devontae Freeman got in Atlanta with a couple of years of inflation. And I think that's the sort of player that Melvin Gordon is. He's that level of back. And I think to some degree, Melvin Gordon was a very good player, might be delusional in thinking that he's Zeke Elliott or Saquon Barkley or Le'Veon Bell or Todd Gurley when he's healthy. He's not that player. And so I think a big piece of this was just Melvin Gordon's feeling on where he stacked up with the other top backs in the NFL. Again, a very good player. But this is about how he assessed his own value. And now, because the Chargers have pulled their offer, it may come down to him swallowing his pride and coming in and playing out his contract and going to free agency next year, which I don't think the Chargers are going to franchise tag him. I think that number's too high in 2020. And I'm not sure they'd even be able to because Philip Rivers is up and you're not letting Philip Rivers go to the market. Appreciate you guys coming out. As always, I'll take your feedback as we go through this transition. You get to me on Twitter at Albert Breer, on Instagram at Albert_Breer, on Facebook at Albert R. Breer. We are going to be moving forward with all of these changes. And again, we really value the way that you guys consume this. So I want to hear from you on what you guys think going into next week, what you guys think coming out of next week. So you can hit me up on all my social media channels. I appreciate all the feedback you guys give us there. And always remember to subscribe to all of our podcasts, which you can do on one feed now, the MMQB NFL podcast feed. That's where my podcast is going to be. That's where Jenny and Connor's podcast is going to be. That's where Andy and Gary's podcast is. All on one feed right there on Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. We are there and we'll be there just a little bit of a different form next week. See you guys then.